You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And we are two unwed women who are revisiting the series Desperate Housewives. Not Real Housewives. We get this confused a lot.
I have to tell people all the time, like, oh, not The Real Housewives, if that's what you're thinking of. Like,
yeah,
it's a scripted show from 2004.
Yeah, I really have to. And then some people will be like, oh, yeah, Desperate Housewives. And then they'll explain that it's a reality show. And I'm like, no. Something completely different.
Yeah.
So, Desperate Housewives from ABC started in 2005, but we're revisiting that and seeing what lessons we can learn from these women about motherhood, parenthood, just being good friends. Haven't learned a lot of friendship lessons. They're not that good of friends.
Honestly, it's like so rare that we get a good friendship moment that it's to the point where we're like excited about it, because it happens like once a season.
Yeah, maybe twice. But that's what we do here. We talk about our own desperate deeds, review the episode that we watch in order. Today we're watching season 2, episode 23, part 2. It was a two-parter on Hulu and other platforms called Remember. And then at the end, we evaluated on several different scales and talk about what we learned, what we liked, what we didn't like, and why it deserved a rating that we gave it. So you probably know that if you've already been here. And if you haven't watched part 1, go watch part 1. Because it was good. It almost got
or at least make sure you listen to us talk about it.
You don't have to even watch.
Yeah, but you got to at least know kind of the setup here, because it's integral to understanding the second part.
I do that with my Law and Order podcast. I don't even watch the episodes, and I've seen a lot of them that they do, but I don't watch like half of them for sure, and I just listen to them take me through the episode, because you just know the character so well after a while, and you know the premise that you're just like, oh my god, and you can like visualize. So you don't even have to watch this show, but if you are watching Hulu or Amazon Prime, and if you've been listening to us for quite a while, please go rate, review, like, follow on every platform. Everywhere we're under just Desperate Pod on Instagram, Desperate Podcasts. You can search it and you'll find us.
Yeah.
So go
to
all
Googleable.
Yeah, we're Googleable. Like, I don't know that we don't do all the tricks and stuff to get high ranking, but find us. You can find us if you really try. Just like you can find anybody if you really try. You can really investigate.
Oh yeah. It's not hard to stalk people these days.
Yes. But I mean, remember part 1, I think we can go through that pretty fast. It set up whatever we're going to have today, left us on a lot of cliffhangers, but Lynette particularly stuck in my head. She's been stuck in my head for a couple weeks now, because Tom is supposedly cheating, and we find out that he just has another kid in Atlantic City, and he's been wasting her time and her money and her sanity going to visit this kid. So that's what we find out after Lynette's been like posted at this hotel for quite a while, it seems like, taking time off work for this bitch.
Yeah.
And then Parker or Porter, whatever, breaks his arm, because he's an asshole. He jumps off a balcony trying to go in the pool, which is stupid. And they end up in the hospital. She calls Tom. He comes. He confesses. And what are we going to do? We don't know.
Yeah, no, that was like low key so depressing. It was almost like, okay, Tom, so you're not having an affair, but you're just lying, I guess, for no reason. Like, you're just lying.
I feel like the minute you find out that you have another kid, you should tell the person you're closest to, aka your wife, most likely.
Especially because like it happened, he makes it very clear that it happened before they got together. So I'm like, while yes, this is a bombshell, it's not like a huge betrayal.
It's not like
the fact that he hid it for so long.
Yeah. And drove her insane, made her find out through her boss, who she was berating. Yeah, she was berating her boss like 10 minutes before. And she has to find out that her husband is probably cheating.
Look, I think the big lesson to take away here is it's okay to like make mistakes, but don't make your partner look like a fucking idiot. because that's what he did. He made Lynette look crazy because she, like you said, popped off at her boss and just like, and he gaslit the fuck out of her. That's why this is so icky. I'm like, why were you making her go insane? Like, if it wasn't this big deal. So, yeah, Tom's not exactly winning in our books right now. I can jump into Susan, our little recap of Susan. She's trying to be independent, guys. She was really trying.
She got our housewife of the week. We were so excited for her to be independent.
It only took her, what, 45 years to get here? But here we are.
It took 45 episodes.
But she decides that she's going to bounce back from her house getting burned down on her own after a confrontation by Edie that ended up being more of a pep talk, which I don't think Edie would appreciate that her.
No, Edie didn't actually want her to turn her life around.
Edie's like, damn it. One more reason why Susan's so likable and quirky. So Susan decides I'm going to do this on my own. And she gets a little motorhome for her and Julie to live in until their house is fixed. And it's like this piece of shit, disgusting, like motorhome that she's like in one scene spraying for ants. And I'm like, oh, cool. So it's like bug infested. Just love to see it. But she's doing it on her own. So proud of her. But Carl comes over to visit one day while Susan and Mike are having coffee because Susan and Mike are a thing again, guys. This is happening. After a very inconsistent season.
Yeah, he called her sexy.
They actually had a really good chemistry moment while they were having coffee where they were flirting. But it led to something that I was like, okay, this is moving at lightning speed. But basically they have a nice moment where you're like, okay, they're gonna start dating again. That's so sweet. But it gets interrupted by Carl, and Carl's like, what do you guys do in a trailer? Like, no, this is not okay. This is my daughter. I'm not gonna allow this. And Mike just kind of leaves. He's like, whatever. But then he like gives Susan the biggest smooch of all time. And we had to admit, it was some good stuff.
It was pornographic.
Next time we see Mike, he's at a jewelry store, and he runs into Carl there, and he's buying an engagement ring, and Carl finds out, and Mike is like, fuck, because he knows. But Mike's like, hey, man, try to keep this a secret, please, because, like, you know, it's a big deal. And Carl's like, yeah, of course. So Carl does sabotage. I'm surprised he didn't tell Susan and instead went this route, which was to break into their motorhome in the middle or in the morning when they were asleep still, drive off and show them this big, beautiful house he apparently is buying for them. And Susan's very reluctant to accept it. But Julie's like, oh, it has a pool. And it's like, it actually is a huge house, which I said in the episode too. How rich is Carl? Like he could just buy a second home.
Yeah, we're not real estate agents, but we both agreed that it was above $1 million household, like in any type of neighborhood across the U.S.
It was like a really nice house. That's all.
It was
like,
super nice.
my brain was almost like, Carl, why don't you just pay for her house to get rebuilt if you could afford this?
For sure, yeah.
Like,
get reimbursed by the insurance later.
I'm like, aren't you a lawyer too? Can't you like help her with this legal stuff? Like, I don't know. I feel like there are a lot of other avenues he could have gone.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we left them for this episode, because Susan was like, I really don't want to take this house, but you could tell that she's feeling conflicted because of Julie.
Yeah, Julie was stoked, but Bree is in a mental institution while this is going on. She checked herself in for a nice rest. She runs an horse in there. There's vibes. Mm-hmm. We saw some vibes between them. He compliments her. He goes to visit some lady for an hour, like, every day. That's a lot of time. I don't know where he has that time. Then Bree is not liking her therapist. He's no Dr. Goldfine. It's just not down. And then she gets a voicemail from Betty, I'll just cover her right now, is, like, meanwhile arrested at the top of the episode for murdering Melanie Foster. The cops caught on somehow. And she gets interrogated, and they show her pictures of the crime scene, which I guess she had never seen before. She had never seen pictures of the crime scene. And she's like, oh, my God, that's Matt's jacket on top of Melanie. So Matt killed Melanie. Mm-hmm. Matt is with Danielle. They ran away together. And she leaves Bree a voicemail while Bree's in the mental asylum and is like, Matt's a murderer. You need to get to Danielle. And Bree fucking loses it. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving this mental institution. And her therapist got really upset by that. He's like, you're in no mental. Well, and he also didn't believe her story. She then got really honest and was like, my daughter's not at cheerleading camp, which is a lie she told. And she is with a murderer and I have to go. And this therapist is like, okay, crazy lady. Mm-hmm. And they give her the drugs that she wanted. She was like begging for some hard drugs to like knock her out. And yeah, then she's just stuck. She's being held captive in a conservatorship, which is very popular these days.
Mm. And, yeah, this is ahead of its time.
And that's where we end up. What's going to happen with Danielle? Will Bree get out? Like, Betty, what's going to happen? Is Betty going to be arrested? What's going on? So that's them.
Yeah. So next we have Gabby. So Gabby decides to – the episode, or for their story, it opens with Gabby and Carlos, and she's going to take him to, like, a tennis lesson that he wanted her to go to. And
like, she golfing. Has, like, they're going golfing.
Or golfing, sorry.
Yeah, matching golf outfits.
I don't – the outfit to me looked like it could go either way, so my brain
they looked like upper, middle class, like, white hobby people do, you know?
Yeah, and Gabby has the most atrocious hairstyle ever in that scene. I have to say it again because it's like these high, like mid-head pigtails. I'm like, they
all had, yeah, they all had better hair like when Mary Alice was alive. Yes. That was what I concluded.
This is crazy. So Carlos is like, oh no, I have community service, I can't go. And so Gabby's like, well, what the fuck, like, this was your idea. And he's like, you should still go. And he's being like really cagey and weird, and he's like watching out the window, and we see him like getting agitated because their gardener is like checking out Zhao Mei. And I'm like, we're both kind of like, who cares? Like,
everybody was like, who cares?
Yeah. And Carlos is like, no, can't I just have a gardener that doesn't want to fuck someone in my house? Which obviously he said a more PG version of that. But Gabby's like, well, this is the perks of the job. You pay him like $6 an hour. And I'm like, damn, they really aren't that opposed to slave labor.
Yeah.
Gabby is at the like country club or whatever. And she goes to the bar, and there's like this news thing, and it talks about how like this businessman was like run over by a car while working his community service. And Gabby starts to get panicky, and then she gets a phone call. So it was the police, and Gabby gets home, and she's like kind of sitting there staring at the house like sad. And Zhao Mei like comes running out all disheveled and like throws her hair up, and Gabby says, oh, Carlos is dead. And Zhao Mei is like, don't, like, please don't kill him. And Gabby's all confused, and she's like, no, he's already dead. And Zhao Mei's like, no, he's in the kitchen. And so Gabby goes in, and she finds Carlos there. And he's just, like, all sweaty and barefoot.
He's post-coital.
And so Gabby tells Carlos, like, that the police called her. She's like, they said you were dead. And he's like, well, I didn't go to my community service. I sent Ralph, the gardener. And Gabby's like, what? And she kind of they kind of sit there for a second, and she's like, Carlos, like, they said you were dead. And it like dawns on him, and he's like, oh my god, poor Ralph, because like he went under Carlos's name. So like, straight up, Ralph is dead. Like, they killed off the gardener.
I'm just imagining he like just busted a nut like at the counter chilling after.
I'm like, so you could get your dick wet, so your gardener died.
Yeah. Wow. That's way funnier now.
I didn't even like really think about it like this until now. Like, oh no, like, all because he wanted to fuck his pregnant surrogate maid. I don't fucking know. Gross. Yeah. Sorry, that just took me out.
That hits.
Basically, like, Gabby gets really suspicious after this, and that's kind of where we're left off. I think it's pretty obvious where the story's headed here.
Yeah, she tries to fuck him one night, and he rejects her.
Yeah.
And it was painful for everyone to watch.
Yeah, no, it was – that shit was rough.
It was – she's busting a nut. It's like drinking orange juice, reading the paper. And he makes her go back to work after. He's like, he fucks her, and then he's like, yeah, finish the laundry.
Yeah, he's like, get back to it. Like,
and meanwhile, this guy's just dead.
They're just like abusing this poor Chinese woman. Like, they're like, we're gonna put a baby in you, we're gonna have affairs, we're gonna make you still cook and clean. Like,
I know, we need like the memoir of Yao Mei.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They are crazy. So the last little thing going on is Paul has been arrested now for murdering Felicia, who's just chilling in a cabin somewhere. And he gets he's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and he fucking goes at Zach. And he's like, go to fucking Noah Taylor and get the money for me, you little bitch. And Zach's like, Dad, I'm just trying to help you. He's like, whatever, you're worthless. And he just goes at Zach, makes him go to Noah Taylor. And Zach tells like the worst lie ever. He's like, it's a really expensive car. I just need the money. And Noah Taylor's like, yeah, like you act like I don't read papers or something. I know that Paul is in jail and I'm not giving you money and you're a little bitch also. So two guys are just coming at Zach. Mm-hmm. And then Zach ends up killing Noah Taylor. He turns off all his machines, keeping him alive. And he's like, how's that for little bitch? Basically, that wasn't how it went. Like, those weren't the words, but you know, that was the energy of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's where we're left off. Noah Taylor is dead. Zach did not, well, I guess Zach will get the money, but yeah, that's what's going on there. And I think that's everyone.
Yeah, no, that was, I think we got through the whole recap there. So
they were locked and loaded last ep. So this is going to finish out the season. I have high hopes. I have high hopes because we came in strong. We came in strong.
This season's just been so all over the fucking place. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they kind of wrap shit up.
Yeah, so I put a bow on it and see what they do. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, we have our own desperate deeds. Mm-hmm. Are you ready with one?
Yeah. Okay. So mine is regarding a job interview. So like 5 years ago, when I was working in Oregon, I went in for a job interview at a jewelry store. Have I told this on here?
I haven't told this, but it made me think of my own job interview story. Okay. So we'll do job interviews today. No, I was literally lost in thought of like every bad job interview.
Cool. So we had like had a party the night before, but I was like, it's fine. Like my job interview's at 10, but that doesn't take into account that you still have to wake up at around 8 to make sure that you're ready and get there on time and all that fun stuff. So I woke up and I was like very hungover. And I felt like shit. And I like forced myself to get ready. And I rolled up to the interview like 15 minutes late, like a solid amount of time to be late, like not good.
Like a couple minutes.
No. And it was with the store manager and then like the district manager. So I was like, oh, fuck. And so I just like did the interview. I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to do this. Like I wasn't late. We're just going to roll with it. And I was like sweating balls the whole time because I felt like shit. And then also I was super stressed and nervous. But at one point, the district manager guy kind of looks at me and he's like, so how important is punctuality to you? And I didn't know what to do, but I was like, okay, I'm just going to play this so straight. And I was like, punctuality is very important to me. I think it is extremely important to be at work on time. I just like pretended I wasn't even fucking late. And I just answered it like that. And it worked. And I got the fucking job.
That's so fucking crazy.
I was just like, I'm just going to be confident as fuck and just act like nothing happened here. And it worked. So that's how I got my job at that jewelry store. I was like, this is either going to be like the most embarrassing thing ever and he's going to call me out. But I think I low-key think he was kind of taken aback that I just kind of answered if like nothing happened.
That was such a choice, like such a strong choice. I never heard that story. I can't believe you did that.
I was like, what else am I going to do? Like, what else am I going to do? I remember
you working at that place. Like, I remember you being a jewelry expert, but like, oh my God, I had no idea.
Yeah. So that's how I got that job. And, you know, sometimes if you're just overconfident, like, so people will be kind of put off by it. It
scares me. Oh my God, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, so it was one of those moments where I had to make a decision, and the decision was, I'm going to play this shit off. So that's what I did.
Wow, well, I could tell you a very drastically different story of every job interview I've had. I'm like such a bad interview. I've gotten better at it. It is true, you guys. If you work at it, you'll get better at it. But I have had, I cannot... I've had more bad job interviews than I've had good interviews, and I've had a lot of interviews in my time. Mm-hmm. I've not gotten a lot of jobs. Like I've not gotten more jobs than I've had jobs. Like I panic, I stall, I'm awkward, I sweat. At the beginning, like years ago, I used to have like rings of sweat around my armpits. I would be like anxiety sweating. Particularly last two, oh my God, it was a couple years. Yeah, time flies. It was early pandemic. Mm-hmm. I was out of a job. I didn't have a job for the beginning of the pandemic, and I thought my life was ending. Then I got a job at this crazy place, which I'll have some other desperate deeds about. It was
buck wild. I already forgot that you worked there.
Yeah, the weirdest place I've ever worked. I think the owners were like ex-meth addicts and they started a business, which good for them, but they still had weird tendencies and expectations. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And I was still interviewing because basically I went into that and I was like, I need this money. Like I literally will run out of money eventually if I don't start working like now. And mm-hmm. I had like payments to make on things, and I was still interviewing other places because I like didn't want to work there. And I am a copywriter, so I wanted to do creative, but at that point I had done finance and I was like, I'll take any job. I'll go back into finance. And I started interviewing for this finance job, and I remember I had to do like an Excel test at one point, and I had forgotten my Excel skills in the past 10 months. So I pretty much failed that, but I did try to be overconfident. Like I knew I fucked up the Excel and like I didn't get the right answer, but I was like, in the part of the test, I had to write an email that was like explaining the Excel. And I was just like, yeah, there might have been an issue or something. I like explained it in the Excel. And then that wasn't the worst part. I had a follow-up phone interview with somebody. I had another interview. I had like three interviews. And I was trying to take it during my lunch hour at this other place and mm-hmm. be like chill. Like they were so crazy at this place I worked that they like would – I thought that they were recording us, like our voice. Oh, yeah. I thought they were recording us. Mm-hmm. They were so crazy. And I remember I'd had a conversation with somebody out by this like parking area, and I thought that they had recording things out there. And so I was in my car. It was like 90 degrees. I was sweating. I was dripping sweat because I didn't want to turn my car on. Mm-hmm. And so I had my windows down a little bit. And then this one guy who was like the owner's brother was out there, like was like one car away, like smoking on a smoke break. And I'm trying to take this phone interview and I'm sweating and I'm like nervous because I'm like, I don't want this guy to hear that I'm on an interview right now. Mm-hmm. And if he hears, he could tell them and then like I'll lose my job. And this lady asked me a question and I swear to God, I started an answer and I said, yeah, like when it comes to that, I really, and then I just froze for like 30 seconds.
Oh my God.
And then I literally said, I'm sorry. I'm feeling really nervous right now. I stopped mid-answer. Oh. And she's like, it's okay. Just take your time. Just breathe.
Oh, no.
And I finished the interview after the guy walked away, and I definitely didn't get that job. Oh. But I was really desperate for the job. I was, like, so disappointed. And I did try to play it off after that. So, like, the HR manager, like, messaged me. I was like, how did it go? And I was like, I think it went okay. I was really desperate. But I ended up getting a different job. I'm really glad I didn't get that job. It all works out. But yeah.
Maybe the universe sabotaged you because it didn't want you to get the job.
Oh my God. That's just one of many. I've had a lot of bad. But yes, so desperate for jobs and desperate to never have an interview like that again. Dang,
I didn't know I opened this like can of worms for you. I had no idea you'd have bad interviews like this. I've had relatively good luck with interviews. I thought I was going to get murdered when I went for my current job interview because they were renovating the office. So I walked in. It was at 6 a.m. because that's how this shit worked. I had to work at 7 that day. So it was at 6 a.m. I walk in and it's just like plastic everywhere, like a murder scene. And then happening? No one's there. No one's fucking there. And then this dude walks out, who's one of our managers. I know who he is now. And he's like, mm-hmm. hello. And I'm like, I'm here for an interview. And he's like, oh, we're renovating. So you're going to have to go in the warehouse. I'm like, I really thought I was going to get murdered, but it worked out.
Yeah, I've had good in the past 2 years, I've gotten like 4 job offers of jobs
I
didn't
want. That's why, like, I was surprised. I was like, I feel like you've had a lot of job offers.
No, we come a long way. Like, I think it's just because I never studied finance. I don't like finance. And I was interviewing for these jobs that I didn't like or want or probably wasn't even qualified for. So that wasn't working for me. But either way, hope you all are employed. And if you're looking for employment, stay confident. That's the lesson.
Yeah. Just call people's bluff. It's rare that they'll call you out.
So. Yeah. But you can also just marry rich and be a housewife. So
that's true.
We're going to go see what our housewives are up to in the season finale. Mm-hmm. And before we do that, since it is the season finale, we hope it's the wildest ride yet. We're going to ask you to buckle up.
Susan rejects Carl once and for all. Lynette meets Tom's baby mama. Bree escapes a mental hospital. Gabby finds out what Carlos has really been up to.
I want to talk about revoking Susan's Housewife of the Week after seeing this episode.
Yeah, she caves so quickly, huh?
Well, last episode, we were so jazzed. We were like, she's going to be independent. Like, look at her. Housewife of the Week. And then the beginning of this episode, she's like, I'm actually taking Carl's house. Yeah. Like, Mike comes over and he's fucking, like, excited to just be back with Susan, I guess. They never discussed this. But then she's like, actually, I'm moving into the house. And I'm like, I hate you. I hate this. I hate this, Susan.
Yeah, no, she just like it's like she went like this up and then dipped below where she was beforehand.
They were like, we can't have her coming off too good to the audience. So they had to put us right back in our place. So really disappointed with Susan. That is what I want to talk about. We'll talk about that when we talk about her. Mm-hmm. But we'll dive into this episode. And I think everybody... us two here, everybody on this podcast feels that this episode was underwhelming.
I think it's extremely underwhelming. And honestly, like, if you look at the ratings for the season, it got really high reviews. And I'm just like, there were better episodes this season. And a lot of this ending felt like a weird cop-out. Like, a lot of character growth, I feel like, was just thrown away.
I was bored. Bored was the word we used.
Yeah, I was bored. I was disappointed. Like, pretty much any character that you felt like grew this year, reverted back to their bullshit. Namely, Susan and Carlos, I feel like, were especially guilty of that. Yes. Anyway, we'll get into it. But it did feel like a regression.
It was not okay. But... we get the return of some important characters. I do have to say, we got the return of some important characters that I've missed. Mm-hmm. I hope they come back again. But it starts with this flashback of Bree and Rex. Love you, Rex, at the pharmacy. And Bree is buying hair dye, and it's a bleach for Danielle, which we see some girl in a black wig, and it looks like Danielle dyed her hair black. Bree won't have that. So Rex is like, what the fuck? And she explains that she won't have Danielle looking like that. And Rex is like, you need to let this go. She's not going to let you dye your hair. That's what girls her age do. And Bree's like, they also get pregnant and become addicted to drugs. So Bree sounds fun. And Rex is like, stop writing them so hard. Like, it's just not going to work. And Bree is adamant that this is in the end, they will be rewarded. Like, they'll become responsible adults. And Rex is like, how can you be so sure of yourself all the time? And she says, why is my confidence a flaw? I know my values and I stay the course. And good for you, Bree. This was before her mental breakdown. She was feeling confident.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks to the pharmacist, AKA George, and she's like, aren't I right? And wow, George is back. And George agrees with her because he has a hard-on for her from the beginning. So he says, you're a good mother. Oh, no. Rex says she's a good mother, but there's a limit. You need to let go of some control. But, you know, George would have said she's a good mom, too. He would have said anything to keep Bree.
Yeah.
And then we see present day. Bree is strapped down in a bare room. So, wow, things have changed. And this janitor comes in and Bree is trying to talk him up to get him to release her from her restraints. And she makes up this whole lie about how the nurse was going to do it, yada, yada. And she asks his name and he says, Alfred. And she says, do people call you Alfie? And she says, like, and he says, no. And she's like, please loosen them. There's no rules against making me more comfortable. And he says, do you think I'm stupid? After I loosen those, you're going to scratch my eyes out and make a run for it. I hope they keep you in here for the next month because I get a real kick out of watching a prissy little whack job like you lying in your own filth. And I'm like, wow, this guy is angry. Mm-hmm. And then Bree is just scared. And that's how we open. Oh, we don't mm-hmm. have – and I think we get the intro right there, but – we didn't get quite a cold open like usual or a Mary Alice Young words of wisdom going on. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to let Jordan take you through the rest of Bree because it might be the most exciting storyline of the episode.
I will say this. It was exciting, but it was kind of not as much as you thought it would be because, okay, we don't see Bree again for like almost half an hour. Like I think the part of why this episode was boring is they kind of changed the structure on us. I don't know if you kind of noticed, but
Structure was awful.
It was all over the place. And like, we literally don't see Bree until, so we see her in the opening and then not until like minute 25 of the episode. So yeah. It's like, I found that kind of strange, but
I hated that. I mean, I have notes about it with Susan and like, I'll call out when like, it was so heavy on some storylines.
So that's the thing, like, with pacing with shows like this, when you have a lot of characters, and this is kind of, like, you'll notice it with a lot of shows, but, like, they tend to, quickly cut between stories, because you're, that way it keeps the audience, like, their attention span, but mm-hmm. it also makes it feel like you're seeing, like, more going on, and it adds, like, a kinetic pace to it, which this episode did not have for very, it was just strange. So, like I said, we don't see Bree for another 25 minutes, and she's talking to her therapist, and the therapist is like, well, what do you want to talk about? And she's like, anything. Like, I'm just trying to get the fuck out of here. Like, I have all these issues. And he's just like, well, you're telling like these ridiculous stories. And he like goes in this weird monologue about how like he like the mind is his, like, what did he even say? He said, human mind is my playground. And he like goes into this weird monologue. And Bree's like, I'm glad you're having fun. And he's just like, I'm not trying to be like flippant, but like you're here and you're troubled. And she's like, I just need a place to rest. And he's basically like, I think there's more than that. And to be fair, he's probably right. Cause Bree's been through a lot of trauma. And I think that she's being like very dismissive, but to be fair, she knows her daughter's in danger. So she's just trying to get the fuck out. So they kind of have this like heart to heart. And she says that she's ashamed. And she's like, well, my kids were my whole life. And like, now I don't even have them anymore. And he's like, well, what would you tell them if they were here? And she's like, I would beg my son for forgiveness. And I would tell her, like my daughter, not to worry and that she's going to protect her. And I was like, wow, Bria's, I love that for her. She's top tier mom. So then she throws the fucking sand in the therapist's face and walks out of his office. And she like, I don't know. I guess he doesn't really freak out, but she like leaves his office and she's like basically trying to escape. And she sees Orson with his buddy who's in the fucking mental hospital. Yeah,
this lady.
Yeah. And Orson like sees her and he doesn't say anything. And he kind of just lets her do her thing to get the fuck out of there. And somehow the guards don't see her, even though she's literally standing right by the door when she runs out. But Orson kind of smiles at her and they have this little moment as she runs off to go save Danielle. And that's kind of where like it cuts away. And then we don't see her again until we're kind of dealing with the Applewhites. So I'll kind of like switch over to their story just for like chronological. Yeah,
switch over to Matt and Danielle who literally did no preparation for their running away together.
Yeah. So Matt and Danielle go home to Bree's house and she's like, Danielle's like, mom's not here. Like we could go in, not a big deal. So they break in and there's a safe and Danielle tries to get into the safe. She's like, oh, my mom must have changed the combination. It's like, first of all, why would you even have the combination to begin with? Like, I'm like, that's so weird. Of course she changed it. So Matthew like runs across the street and to his house And it's pretty much empty, but like a bunch of stuff's packed up, and Matt finds like his mom's purse on the table, and his mom comes downstairs and she's like, "You did it." And he looks at her like with this glare and just keeps digging through her purse. And she's like, "You killed Melanie and you put your jacket on it." And he's like, "You weren't there. You don't know what happened." And she's like, "Caleb hurt her." And he's like, "And Melanie threatened to like bring us all down because of that." And she's like, You made him think he murdered a girl. Like, I was going to kill him." And she's like, I don't think I had another choice. Like, I knew you wouldn't like hand Caleb over to the police. It would protect him. And she's like, "I would have protected you too." And he's like, "I really couldn't count on that," which was actually kind of sad. I was like, "Yeah, poor Matthew." And so he's just like, "You don't love me as much. You never have." And she's kind of taken aback by it. And then she says, "Perhaps." And I'm like, "Ooh." And she's like, "Well, he just needed me more. And you're always going to be able to find love. And he's just not." And she's like, "You don't understand that. Like, you don't understand that he needs more from me." And he's like, "You know, I know that you believe that, but like, this still fucking sucks for me," basically. And so he's like, "I tried to forgive you, but I can't." And so he like takes a fucking sledgehammer and leaves, because I guess he's going to go bust that safe open. But his mom, like, she calls the police. And Betty is clearly disturbed by all this. And she tells 911, she's like, "I need the police." And I'm like, "That's not how that works. You have to like..."
Yeah, tell them. I'm like, that's not how the operator works.
No. So they break into the safe where Bree has like a crazy amount of cash for some reason. Like probably at least 50 grand in there, because she had like fat stacks. Like a lot of them in that
safe. A lot of money. I was like, damn.
No, it was crazy. So then we see Bree. It almost looks like she ran home from the mental hospital.
She did. I think she ran. She didn't have a car. My notes were, she's running for her little life.
So they're like ransacking the kitchen. And I'm like, Daniel's really just so stupid. And
they were so bad at running away together. They had no preparation. I was appalled.
No, it was awful. And so Bree's like, "I don't know what you're planning, but I need to talk to you right now." And Danielle is like, "Give it up. I'm like, this is not happening. I'm not leaving with you." And Matthew like rips the phone off the wall like a fucking Hulk. And she's like... And so Bree's like, "Do you remember Melanie Foster? Matthew's the one that killed her." And Danielle's like, "I know you just don't want us to be together, but this is the lamest thing I've ever heard." And so Bree's like, "Well, I know what happened. Like, I have the whole story. Like, I know it's true." And Matthew's like not even really denying it. Like, he's just kind of standing there. And he's like, "Let's go. Let's get out of here." And so they like leave. And Bree's like, "Fuck that." So Bree like tries to stop them. And Matthew is like, "This isn't happening." He's like kind of standing behind Danielle, and Danielle's like trying to talk her mom into like letting them leave. And I'm like, that's obviously not gonna happen. Then Matthew proceeds to fucking pull a gun on Bree.
I've been thinking about this for a while. Where did he get the gun?
Okay, so I'm pretty sure he got it from his mom. Like her,
did he?
Like, because he doesn't answer, but Danielle does ask him. So he didn't, unless he had it beforehand.
I don't know where he got the gun.
I feel like... I don't know either, I guess. I would have assumed, honestly, they got it from Bree's safe, because she's a fucking gun nut. But then Danielle says, "Where did you get that?" So clearly, no.
Maybe he stole it from that detective fell through. But that was, like, long ago. Whatever. So he has a gun.
Yeah, he has a gun.
I have to call it that plot hole. Where did he get the gun?
So Bree's, like, trying to tell him, like, get out of the fucking house. And... Danielle's like, "Please don't point that at my mom." And he like shoves Danielle away. And Bree's like, "Please, Danielle, like leave." And Matthew's like, "I'm going to shoot you. Like, stop trying to talk to us." And Bree like refuses to leave. And she kind of walks towards him. And I wanted to note she's wearing fucking moccasins, I guess, which was kind of hilarious.
They closed up on that shoe.
Yeah. They're like, "Bree's wearing moccasins. Damn it." And they show like multiple close ups of it. And so they're like, both of them are like, so Danielle's like screaming at Matthew at this point to like stop pointing the gun at Bree. And Bree is like, "Fucking shoot me then, do it, bitch." She's like, "Call it his bluff." And she like gets real close, puts her head basically against the fucking barrel of the gun. And she's just standing there. And I thought this was great acting. But then a bullet hole comes through the window. And we see that Matthew's been fucking shot. And he I believe he's dead at this point. Right away. It looks like he's dead right away. So they got a kill shot. It's like literally the SWAT team outside. I'm like,
I know. They get the SWAT team. They come out of nowhere so fast. And then we see a body bag later. So assuming he's dead.
But Danielle starts like screaming and crying and Bree holds her. And I'm like, for once, I guess, Danielle, watching someone get murdered, let alone the guy you're going to run away with, I guess would be pretty traumatizing. So
I'm still rolling my eyes though. I'm just like, whatever. Like,
so like, that's pretty much where it ends for them because the next thing we see is like Betty, like basically the, like you said, the body bag, Betty's kind of like watching this happen and all is back to normal, I guess. She moves away. And that's kind of where we're left for Bree's storyline. I do have to say, like, with Bree and Danielle, this storyline almost felt like it had no stakes because I just really didn't care about Danielle.
No, I was like, last episode I made a note. I'm like, Danielle might get murdered. I don't really care. Yeah.
I just felt like also, I didn't feel like Danielle was ever really in danger. Because when Matthew killed Melanie, it wasn't like he was just murdering his girlfriend. Like, that was a very crazy circumstance. So I was like, I don't really think Danielle's in danger.
Like, but he's capable of murder. And he escalated rather fast, I'd have to say.
I agree. But I guess, like, we never really saw him get aggressive with her. So I just always felt like they made it seem like he was going to hurt Danielle when that wasn't really, like, set up whatsoever. Like, it's like, oh, he's capable of it, but only in a situation where, like, that was very unique. And, like, Danielle, I just wish that they had set up more of his aggression so we actually felt like there was a real threat. Because it just felt so forced. Like, I really did it. Like, they made it seem like Matthew, like, while, yes, he set Caleb up, like, they made it seem like he didn't really want to kill Melanie and did feel something about it. And, like, that talk with his mom, too, was, like, depressing. So I just kind of felt like this was, like, really shoehorned in that he was like this murderous whack job.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, it is a bit shoehorned because he didn't. I mean, maybe that's the point. Maybe he is a sociopath, I guess. He didn't.
I just wish we'd seen him do more like way. Like, okay, if this was a better season, they would have shown Matthew doing like sneakily doing kind of bad things throughout the season. So we kind of got an idea that he was like this bad guy. But we really never see him act like a terrible person per se. So I was kind of just like, this just felt like, I don't know. It just felt really forced. And I don't think Bree needed to like put her head up against a gun for this to like be
for
stopped.
Danielle.
Yeah. Like, this just felt like, I just feel like they could have just called the police. The police would have found them. Like, the police would have just found them and it would have been fine. Like, I don't think that this was necessary. So I guess it just, that's why it kind of felt like such a letdown. Cause I was like, what are we even watching? Like, what's the point? I just don't care.
It was, it was the most exciting storyline of the episode, though. I'll preface that. Maybe Susan, I'll cover Susan, and I'm saying maybe Susan's was interesting in a way at the end, so we'll get there. And I'm glad we covered Bree first. There was an Orson snippet there. He's still around, you guys, and he's going to come back into play in Susan's storyline. He does some dentistry work, which I respect. We see him at work, but we start out with a close-up on the Nissan logo. Whoa, it was paid. This was paid by Nissan, we get it. And Mike is washing his truck, and that's how they got it in there. And he looks over, and Susan and Julie are across the street, and they're packing up a little red car, and we know whose little red car that is. And he goes over and he's like, what's going on? And Carl is like, oh, hey, plumber. And we find out, top of this episode, that she's moving into the house that Carl bought her. So, revoking Housewife of the Week, you suck, Susan. I can't believe you're accepting that house. And he says, rightfully so, he bought you a house. And we're all aligned. And she says, oh, he's not moving in with us. And she's acting like it's not a big deal. And I can't believe she didn't tell her kind of boyfriend this.
After she says, fucked Carl, what, a month ago?
Like, a month Jesus ago. Christ. And then Mike is reacting reasonably. He says, after that whole speech you told me about wanting to go it alone, and after I offered to let you stay with me, and she says, well, you had a room and this is a house. And I would have just said, fuck it right there. I would have been like, fuck you.
Like, if you really can't see why this is shitty for me, then, like, I don't want to be a part of this. Like,
yeah.
It's like, and she forgets that she fucked Carl, like, multiple times.
I just think that's so rude. I would rather stay at the in a room in the house of a man that I love than
actually cares.
A guy that I don't like at all buying me a house. No who question.
Who's manipulated her, cheated on her, used her. Like, it's just so, like, Susan, how many times are you going to let Carl run you over, like, at this point?
So I hate this. I'm upset. And Mike is upset in a different way now. He looks at Carl and he's like, you saw me buying the ring and cut me off. And I'm like, I don't think this is Carl's fault. I'm sorry. Like, this is all Susan.
No, I will say, though, that Carl did. Carl was obviously baiting Susan to, like, for that reason, but Susan didn't have to accept.
Yeah, so then Carl is – or Susan's like, what about a ring? And she perks up, and I'm like, ew, I hate you even more now. And Mike is like, put the box down, Carl. And he's like, when are you going to hit me? And they do brawl, and Susan is swatting at them with a spatula and asking about the ring, which is so inappropriate. And then Mike just decks Carl, and Susan and Julie – are like, oh my God, I can't believe you punched him. And Mike just walks away. And I said, oh, Susan sucks again. Mm-hmm. And then Susan goes over to Mike, and this is later in the day, it seems. She says, are you okay? And he's like, hopped up on pain meds, chipped my tooth. And she says, oh, call Orson. And she just has his business card. And I'm like, what the fuck? You already know that he's jealous of Orson too, so you should calm down with Orson talk. And
I love, though, I have to say, I love that they set up that she had his business card, but they couldn't set up, like, Matthew being evil. Like,
yeah. They had a lot of convenient setups. That,
but not, like, major plot points.
And he just says, thanks for that. He says, he's all, like, he literally just got in a fight with a man in the front yard, and he's like, thanks for this business card.
How many men is Mike gonna have to fight before Susan stops acting foolish?
And she goes, about that ring, though, and I'm like, shut up, Susan. Shut up. Like, I hate this. And she's like, is there anything in particular you'd like to ask me? And he's like, nope.
He's like, bye, bitch. Get the fuck out of here.
I can't even believe he's entertaining this conversation with her. And he's like, not as long as Carl has you wrapped around your finger. And she's like, he doesn't. And he's like, you accepted a house from him, and you're stupid if you don't think he has ulterior motives. So he's just saying what we're all thinking. And she's like, that is going to be a great place for my daughter to live. And I'm like, who cares? And when he makes his move, okay, I don't know. She says something about how Carl doesn't have the upper hand, but he does. And then she starts talking about the ring again. And Mike says, I just don't want to get deeper and, like, realize your heart is somewhere else. And I think that's valid. And she says, my heart is in the right place. And I'm like, yeah, right, bitch. And he just says, I can't have this conversation. My just everything hurts. And and then she's like, you don't even know what my answer would have been. And I said, OMG, this is so annoying. Final note on that scene. Okay, and then we're spending way too much time on Susan's storyline. That's my note next. Somehow we're back at Susan, and this is before we have even gotten to Bree. Now Mike is at Orson's, and he's like, Orson looks at his teeth and is like, oh, you've been to prison? It's like, what? Mike's like, you could tell from my teeth. And he's like, jailhouse dentistry, unmistakable and not pretty. And Mike has good-ass teeth, so I don't know.
I want to go to my jail dentist.
I know.
Like, my teeth look like that.
The taxpayers are paying for it, so. And he says, I did a few years in Kansas, and asks him if he was a prison dentist. And he's like, oh, in dental school, I did a few years. And Mike's like, I had a feeling we met before when I saw you in that theater. And any chance I was one of your guinea pigs? And he says, no, I was in Virginia. And he's like, wow, that's weird, because your diploma says you graduated in Minnesota. And I'm like, okay, well, this is such a pointless conversation. He says, I'm licensed to 3 states, yada yada, open wide. He gives him the biggest shot I've ever seen, and shout out Novocaine. That's where we end that scene. And now we're still on Susan. It's probably not even any Brie at this point. Susan tells Julie that Mike hasn't seen the invitation, and we're like, what invitation? What foolishness is going on now? and she's untangling Christmas lights. We get the vibe it's not Christmas, so what's going to happen with those Christmas lights? She has invited Mike to a romantic dinner so that she can propose to him because they have not gone on any dates since she fucked Carl, and she thinks it's the right time to propose as she's accepting a house from another man. So Susan might have some flawed thinking there. So Mike goes and looks at the invite. It's kind of weird on the front. Like, I don't know how she designed this. And then he opens it up and there's like a map and shit. And like, it looks like it could be cute, but probably could be better. And I think this plan sucks. Now, she has a talk. She has to go tell Carl that things are over for sure between them. They're sitting in front of her burned down house and she's like, we've been through a lot and like, we will always have Julie. I know why you want me that house and I can't move into it. So we're like, yes, Susan might have redeemed herself a little bit. We're not getting back together ever. You need to move on and I'm marrying Mike. So she doesn't even know that he's going to say yes, but I like the confidence, I guess. And she's still married to Carl. Let's not forget. So she makes him sign the divorce papers. And if you love me, you'll let me go. And I said, why are all these guys in love with her? Like, she's not that cool. But Carl says, you know where to find me if it doesn't work out. And I don't know where we're going to find him because I don't know where he lives because he doesn't live with Edie anymore. So we don't know where we're going to find him.
And maybe at that house. Maybe he'll move into it.
Yeah. Flash forward to the night of the big proposal. Mike goes over to his truck. And I was like, first I was confused. I'm like, he's driving across the street because Susan lives across the street. No, he's driving somewhere to, like, get flowers. And we see a little red car follow him. So I was like, Carl is following him. This is weird. And then, okay, JK, Mike was getting flowers. The music is tense. Susan is super ready for this date. She's pre-gaming with some wine. She looks at her bare ring finger longingly. And Mike looks at his ring, and he's crossing the street. And I said, Carl goes just hit him with a car, and it is a gruesome scene. They did some good special effects. But it isn't Carl. It's fucking Orson. And I was stunned. And then Susan is calling Mike and leaving a voicemail, and it's the same energy from season one where she has called 500 times. She says, sorry to keep calling you and leaving voicemails. This is it. Thought you gave me the thumbs up, but maybe it was some other type of gesture. And the lights go out on the RV. Orson is crazy. We will talk about it at the end of the episode. So that's what happened, you guys.
I have to say this, while this episode was like very Susan heavy for a lot of nothing, it actually does set up a ton of season three. So I will say this finale sets up the next season a lot better than the last finale did. Because remember how it was just kind of like, oh, the Applewhites moved in.
Yeah, we're like, who are these people? Like, there's somebody moving in.
Like, pretty much everything that happens in this episode is continued in the next season.
Okay, good. This so was all, say, it was not for nothing, this torture I went through.
Yeah, so I do wish they'd made it, they'd found that balance of setup and finale a little better. But I will say, it like, once you kind of start season three, this finale will be a little more, I don't know. It just felt like they had a vision for season three, which is nice because they clearly didn't for season two. So,
I mean, Mike is redeeming. I like seeing Mike, like, sad that he has to get shot, has to get hit by a car, has to get beat up every other episode because Susan's a dumbass.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Sad about that, but I was so bored with season. Like, nobody should be in love with her. She sucks, you guys. She sucks.
Well, I was on Reddit the other day and someone posted, like, I'm watching Desperate Housewives for the first time and I'm on season three. And it's like, why do all these super put together men fall in love with Susan? Like, why? Like, what about her energy is like attractive to guys like that?
But we all know somebody in real life like that, where like guys are sprung off them and you like meet this girl and you're like, this is the girl everybody sprung off of. This is the girl.
Yeah.
That's Susan.
It's weird as fuck. Yeah. Yeah. So Susan, you know, classic like mediocre energy.
You're so average, Susan. Like, yeah, like probably boring to talk to.
I mean, her story was even that interesting because Mike's the one that has the interesting thing happen to him, not her. So, like, yeah. I feel like every other housewife had something fucking nuts happen to them directly, but Susan, not really.
She's so, like, I'm so alternative for proposing to him.
Yeah, no, she's like, stupid as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you talk about Lynette, somebody worth men being in love with.
So, our girl Lynette, she had to deal with some serious bullshit this episode, if you ask me. Going into her storyline.
The most bullshit, the most real bullshit of any of these women.
I want to preface this again by saying, like, Tom is a fucking doofus. Like, I do feel like his doofus levels are just, like, through the roof this past couple episodes.
Yeah, doofus is the accurate word because I, like, don't have a fiery hatred for him, but he just does dumb things sometimes.
It's just, like, and I think this, like, kind of shows that, too. Like, he just doesn't understand. It's like he thinks the thing that's going to upset Lynette is, like, it's not what's actually going to upset her. It's how he handles it that upsets her. And that's why he's a doofus. Because I don't think he's, like, malicious. But I do think that he just does not fucking think. And this is peak Tom not thinking.
He, so, like, fumbles a lot. He fumbles it. Like,
mm-hmm. It's bad. So, Lynette's storyline kicks off with the flashback to when Penny... That's her name, right? Penny?
The baby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it might... Yeah, Penny is born.
Yeah.
Yeah, because so they're naming her.
Yeah. So they're trying to pick a name for this new baby, and Penny keeps coming up, but Tom says he knew a Penny who was a slut, and I'm like, okay. So it's a bit aggressive, but basically Tom makes a comment, and he's like, you win this one. She's like, win this one? Like, what the fuck? And she grabs his, like, collar, and she's like, you wanted 4 kids, we're done, no more kids, like, stop, we're not having more, like, this is that, like, we're done. Tom's like, okay, I promise, like, we're done. And she's like, okay, cool, so we're good. So that's kind of where, like, the hospital scene leaves them at. But Tom's like, I didn't mean to upset you. And he's just, like, being like, he's got, like, that new dad energy, I feel like, every time they have a baby, where he's like, again, let's do it again. But
I know, it's not okay.
And he's not realizing that, like, a person has to be fucking pregnant for 9 months to make that happen. Yeah. I'm like, Tom, like, what do you not get? And Lynette's like, yeah, our kids are a blessing, but I'm done with blessings. Like, we're good. And she's like, I'm going to lose my fucking mind, which we saw her do in season 1. So she was right to predict that. But it's actually, like, pretty recent to the start of season 1 that flashback takes place, because Penny's a baby in season 1. So this was just before Mary Alice killed herself, you guys. So flash forward, and Lynette and Tom are chilling on their car, and another Nissan emblem.
I know.
Nissan, like, really... Nissan pays a lot. I want to know kind of what the deal was here, because we had that whole Xterra ad, and, like, twice we've, like, started on the Nissan logo and panned out.
I know.
So I was like, geez, but...
How much money?
We cut to the future here, to the current day, and Lynette and Tom are waiting for Nora and Tom's daughter, Kayla, to show up. And you could tell Lynette's not exactly thrilled by this, but she's making it happen because she's a good wife, and she loves her husband, and she loves her family, so good for Lynette. We love to see a good husband-wife team here, even though Tom's a fucking fool. Nora rolls up in a taxi, and she steps out of this cab wearing probably the most horrendous dress I've ever seen in my entire life. And I'm sorry I have to point this out, but it's like a halter style, like, dress where it's, like, ruched at the waist, and then, like, it's this horrible lime green and, like, floral design. It's just awful. Like, it's so bad. And then her hair is in that weird, like, you know, like those little knots people would do with, like, chopsticks. Like, it's like that vibe. And it's just horrible. It's horrible.
Nora's no competition is what we learn.
Yeah, no. So she comes running up and, like, throws herself onto Tom and her arms around him. And he's like, fuck. And he kind of looks at Lynette, and he's like, pushes her off. And then, like, Nora just says it. And she looks at Lynette, and she's like, I guess it'd be weird if we hugged. And they're like, probably. Yeah, that'd be weird as fuck. And I'm like, great. So we're already getting off to, like, an aggressive start. So then Nora's like, oh, Kayla didn't come. And she's like, I just couldn't stand to look at her face. We got into a fucking fight. And I'm like, here you go. They come in with Nora, like, guns blazing. I feel like they're like, we're just going to make her the worst. So Lynette, this whole scene, is just, like, super stoic. She's not having it. But, you know, she's playing along. they all go to a diner and they're talking about Kayla, and Nora's like, she's so pretty, she's so smart, she's great, she's the star on her soccer team, just like popping off about how great she is. She pulls out photos and Tom's like, you know, we wouldn't need a photo if you just brought our daughter.
Yeah, she's like, why didn't you bring the kid? That was the whole point.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, sorry, I just haven't had much time to get away on my own since I've been taking care of our child for the past 11 years. And Tom's like, you didn't even fucking tell me. But he just, like, apologizes because he's trying not to cause problems. And he's like, I know it's been hard. You've done an amazing job. She's like, apology accepted. And then she's like, I just wanted to talk about business, so I didn't think it was a good idea for Kayla to be here. And Lynette's just like, what? Like, business? Like, what do you even mean? And Nora's like, well, I want to talk about child support. And this is just like, Lynette and Tom are just kind of bored.
They're like, fuck.
Nora's like, I feel like we have a very good case. And she hands them like paperwork. And Lynette's like, we can't fucking afford this. We already have four kids. Like, this would bankrupt us. And Nora's like, well, I've got like 11 years coming to me. And Tom's like, you never told me about her. Like, what the fuck? Like, what was I supposed to do, basically?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is just so infuriating because this woman is like straight up trapping them. And she's like, I'm not the bad guy. Like, he's the one that knocked me up and abandoned me. And he's like, how could he abandon you if like he never knew like that the kid existed? And Nora's just like, you know, you better do right by me or you're going to become Mr. Deadbeat or Mrs. Deadbeat Dad to Lynette. And I'm just like, Lynette's life is about to just be fucking upheaved by this woman. Like, right out the gate, we're just like, oh.
I know. You can tell. You can tell this is not going to be good.
No. And I have to say, Tom, really, this girl, like, really, she's not.
Lynette says it too. Lynette says it. She pops off.
Yeah, no, it's fucking awful. And this bitch is like acting like a little kid. And Lynette just straight up says, like, are we just gonna talk louder? Like, is that the plan? You just want to raise your voice and make a scene, basically. And she's like, are you gonna throw a tantrum and everyone gets scared and backs off? Like, is that what you're gonna do? And she's like, I don't work that way, lady. She's like, I don't really fucking care like why he had sex with you. And she just like pops off, like you said, like gets at her, and then she's like yelling and she's like, am I being loud enough for you, bitch?
It was great. Yeah,
I was like, I was so here for it.
I was there for it.
So Tom's like, I'm just gonna pay the bill.
Yeah, he's like, check please.
Yeah, he just like leaves the two of them sitting there. I'm like, oh my god, Tom, like, what is wrong with you? So yeah, then the next time we see them, we cut to Susan and Carl for like a second, and then it cuts back to them. And they're going through, like, all their bills. And Lynette's like, this is going to be our fucking kid's, like, college fund. Like, this check is going to be a disaster. And she's like, but she'll sign away her claim for child support. So, like, hopefully this will be, like, a lump sum, essentially. And he's like, so, like, what are we talking about then? And Lynette's like, well, we need to make sure it's big enough that she takes it seriously. Like, 30 grand. And Tom's like, 30 grand? And she's like, if we go to court, like, we're going to lose and end up paying 11 years of child support. Like, we could lose the house. And he's like, we're just fucking screwed. And Lynette's like, Tom, like, you can't be the one freaking out. She's like, I'm trying so hard to, like, be strong. And, like, your meltdowns don't help. And he's just like, oh, like, that's true, I guess. She's like, I know we're using up a lot of our savings, but we got to keep this crazy woman out. And it would be the best money ever spent if it keeps her away. And Tom just kind of looks at her.
I agree. Everybody agrees.
Yeah. And so she's like, we'll be fine. Like, everything's fine. And so then we cut to, like, a few scenes later, Nora is, like, shows up at their house looking like trash. She really does look like Atlantic City trash. It's good casting.
She looks like they cast well on this one.
Yeah, so she comes in and Lynette, like, calls Tom down, and Nora's like, I don't keep things bottled up, so I'm going to get this off my chest. And I'm like, oh, my fucking God. She's like, you made me feel really bad about myself at the restaurant. And I'm like, fuck, like, this is so irritating. And she's like, you treated me like some kind of, like, mercenary, and I'm here to extort you. And I'm like, well, you were, so of course they're gonna treat you like that. And Lynette's like, yeah, you did extort us, like, I don't know what to do. And Laura's like, oh, there it is, that mean streak you have.
I know, I'm like, this is crazy.
She's psychotic. And she's like, I just want what's best for our kid. And then Lynette's like, this was my favorite line. She's like, as the mother of 80% of his children, like, I think, like, I don't think it's in their best interest for you to, like, put us into bankruptcy. And Nora's like, of course it's not. Like, that's why I'm here. And so she, like, tosses, like, the crumpled paper, like, of her lawsuit. And she's like, I signed the waiver with the check. I'm not going to ask for any back child support. And, like, they're like, thanks. Like, you could tell that they're like, uh-oh, shark of the water. Like, what do we do? And she's like, sealing it. It's not all about money. And I'm like, oh my fucking God. She's like, it's about family. And I literally wanted to throw something at my TV, like, watching that scene, because it's just so, the manipulation and just, like, the difficultness of this woman is just, oh my fucking God.
Great actress, though.
She's selling it.
Nora, like, no shade to people with crystals, but, like, Nora owns crystals.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Nora, she goes to, like, a New Age church.
Yeah. No, she's,
thinks that she's, like, a really good person.
Yeah, she thinks she's, like, the best person to ever exist. She's a fucking narcissist. Like, and she's she's, like, a hippy-dippy Atlantic City trash narcissist, too. Like, it's
It's like we've all met that person that for some reason just doesn't like you and you're being like rational, reasonable. And then they're like, there's that mean streak. And you're like, what?
Like, literally gaslight. Like, that's another form of gaslighting, essentially, like tricking you into thinking you're the problem.
Yeah.
And it just makes you more furious. You're like, oh my God, like, please, like, I'm begging you. And that's essentially what Lynette is doing in this scene.
Yeah.
But Nora's like, we're all a big family now. And Lynette's face is just like,
she bought that house down the street. They'll be around. We're interested to see what's gonna happen next season, I guess.
Woo-hoo. It's such a fucking mess. And so she's like, yeah, like, I live down the street. I'm in your life now. Have fun. We're gonna do this thing. And I'm like, wow, they're really setting us up for next season with some frustrating shit. So
I don't know. I think Lynette should have just left his ass.
I think so, too. Like, this is such a complicated situation, and I feel like Lynette's the one having to, like, deal with it. Because, like, in the scene where they're talking with Nora and trying to be reasonable, Tom is not speaking.
Yeah, Tom, like, is, like, just meek, doesn't say shit, doesn't say anything, so.
Well, and Nora's, like, straight up being disrespectful to Lynette, and Tom's not stopping her. Like, if I were Tom, I'd be like, Nora, like, I understand how you're feeling, I guess, but, like, you can't speak to Lynette like that.
Like, yeah, but then wife that way.
Yeah, but, like, Nora is clearly using her child as, like, a bargaining chip, essentially, to fuck with them. And it sucks. Yeah, like, it's just so shitty. Gross. So that's a fun little spot.
Yeah. Last but not least is Gabby and Carlos. And we get the return of John Roland. We don't get the return of him, but we get a flashback to him. And boy, was I missing Jesse Metcalf. And I don't know. Obviously, it's wrong. Don't cheat on your partner. I think Gabby has every right to be hurt. But Gabby did do it first. I do have to say. Mm-hmm. We see that. And I don't know that just because your husband is never home, it gives you reason to cheat on him.
Just leave him.
Just leave him. But we will see her reasoning later on. So it starts off with her talking to Xiao Mei, and she asks about the comment about not killing Carlos. She's like, I don't get, like, why you said that. And Xiao Mei is like, Ralph's dead, not Carlos. She says, yeah, but you said don't kill him, not that he's dead. And I'd have to be really angry to kill someone, so do I have a reason to be angry at Carlos? And she's like, oh, so much laundry. And then she sees Yami's panties and they're ripped, and she's like, how did you rip these? And she says she fell down, and I love that excuse. Oh, I fell.
Also, like, dang, what kind of sex they be having where he's like ripping her panties. Like, what the fuck?
I know. I have never had my panties ripped, I have to say. Oh my God. So that's happening. And then flashback to 2 years ago, and Gabby is on her porch yelling at Carlos about coming home on the phone. She's like, I don't care what Tanaka says. Throwback to sketchy business partner. And she says, I'm all alone in this house, and this isn't what I signed up for. Don't hang up. I'm not done yelling at you. And then John Roland is there, and Gabby's like checking him out as she gets hung up on. And
she's eyeballing her 16-year-old piece of meat.
She was like, ooh, underdeveloped. Love it. She looks at the phone, and she looks at John and goes over to him in a skimpy dress. And she's like, hello. And he says, hey, how are you? And she says, the best you've ever had, and closes the garage door. This is very rapey and not okay. And then they bang. After they bang, John is laughing, and she says, what's funny? And he says, me and Justin had this bet about who could lose their virginity at Bible camp, and I guess I won.
That whole sentence is insane. Bible camp, Justin, virginity.
Oh oh my god. And she says, shit, you're a virgin. He's like, so it didn't show. This is like the rewriting Bad Porn.
Yes, this is Bad Porn. You're right.
No, I mean, I guess, well, weird when you started naming the American presidents in order. And he was like, I was just trying to. And I was like,
gross.
And she's like, I get it, but Paul Revere was never a president. And he's like, had a good time. She's like, can't happen again. He says, why? And she says, I only did this because I was angry at Carlos, and now I'm not. And I'm like, ew, that is not an okay way to deal with your emotions.
No, all this is a disaster. Like, this is just a mess.
Oh my god. And John's like, you should be mad at him. He's never around. And he's probably having his own affair right now. And she's like, I doubt it. And she's, and he says, how do you know that? And she says, he doesn't have an adulterous bone in his body. For him, sex is about intimacy. It's how he shows love. And I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she says, instead of talking and listening and spending time with me, he doesn't like do any of that. And then John Roland kisses her. And she goes, what was that for? And he's like, thought you needed a kiss. And I'm like, ugh, this is so gross. And then since this is the last time, you should make the most of it. And they bang again. And he asks if she trusts Carlos. And she says, completely. Present day, Gabby is putting baby monitors in every room because she's trying to catch Carlos in the act. Mm-hmm. And so she goes to Carlos and she says, I'm going shopping, going to see a trainer, I'll be gone forever, so you guys do what you will with that information. And she goes and she gets in her car and she's trying to listen, and it's like picking up another baby monitor at like Lynette's mm-hmm. house, and then it picks up her house, and they're just eating together, and they're yeah. talking shit about Gabby a little bit. And then Susan starts off this scene, and I thought we were gonna have a Susan scene, and I wrote in all caps complaining about that. I was like, too much Susan. And but it's not. It's Gabby, Lynette, and Susan, and they're all talking about their lives. They're having a little powwow, and Lynette's baby monitor goes off, and it's picking up Carlos's baby. It's picking up the other baby monitors. Mm-hmm. And it's Carlos talking about Jiamei kissing, and it's like clear that there's something going on. It's like picking up this frequency, and Gabby's like, don't turn it off. And we hear Carlos fucking Jiamei in the car talking about putting the seat back and like moaning. And it's like clear. It's very clear. And everybody's awkward. And Lynette is like, I should turn this off. And Gabby runs home like a superhero. She's like, hoo, 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 hoo.
I know. Like, you can see Lynette and Susan though are just like, especially because Susan's been cheated on, and then Lynette thought she was being cheated on. So there's like, yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. So Gabby runs home lightning speed. Her heels fall off. They break. She doesn't give a fuck about that Gucci. And she has no shoes by the time she gets there. And she opens the garage and catches Carlos in the act. And I am sick. And
she doesn't even open it. She just
She doesn't bust in on them. And then Jiamei comes inside from fucking, and Gabby is like, are you done with my husband? And she's like, oh, yeah, good. I have a project for you. Okay. And she throws everything. They throw together everything out of the top floor window. And he's on the front lawn. He's like, can we talk about this? You gave me permission to sleep with somebody. Meaningless sex is not sleeping with the woman who's carrying our child, is what Gabby says. And he's like, what does it matter? In their house, in their garage. And he's like, what does it matter? You had an affair and I had an affair. And she's like, you didn't have a reason to. I'm here and I've been here. I tried so hard not to be selfish, to put your needs above mine. And
tried to have a fucking baby for him, like, multiple times.
Yeah,
like,
she says, I agreed to be a mother. So she's pissed. And mm-hmm. he says, you have every right to be mad at me. I'll go to a hotel. We'll work this out. And she says, go get a lease. And then Jiamei is like, can I go too? And she says, no, you can start dinner. You have my baby in your belly. And Jiamei says something in Chinese. And Gabby's like, I don't know what you said, but I didn't like the tone. Remember, I'm the boss of you, or I'm going to make this the worst 9 months of your life. End scene.
It was fucking excellent.
It was.
Honestly, I love to see it. I
was like, yeah, I'm like, actually, now that I'm thinking, Gabby's storyline wasn't too bad either. But it was just,
I just love how stoic she got when she's sitting there waiting. And I'm like, that's badass. I really liked that.
I need to have the poise and control that Gabby has. But mm-hmm. she's like, okay. No, I'm, it's growing on me. But just to end everything out, Zach inherited Noah Taylor's estate. And he's sitting there. There's some lawyer standing around. And he's like, I need to sign papers. And basically, it's like transferring everything to Zach. And he's like, this is all mine? And he's like, yeah. And then the cell phone rings. It is Paul in jail. And Paul's like, what's the deal with Noah? And he says, oh, yeah, he's not going to give us the money. And he's like, go back and talk to him. And Zach's like, I don't know, we'll change his mind. And he's like, Paul is like, am I going to see you tomorrow? And Zach's like, nah, I got to go. And bye, Dad. And then the lawyer's like, can I do anything for you? And he's like, get me a phone with a new number and fill in this stupid lake. I'm like, what's happening?
But Zach's like going full Lex Luthor on everyone's ass.
Yeah, I mean, Paul got what he deserved there, but that's what's going on with Zach. And then we finish out the episode and Mary Alice is like, this is the street where I used to live and these people are who I shared my life with. I met them the day I moved in and saw what they brought with them. Beautiful dreams for the future and quiet hopes for better life, not just for themselves, but for their children too. If I could, would I tell them what lies ahead? Would I warn them of the sorrow and betrayal that lies before? No, from where I stand now, I see enough of the road to understand how it must be traveled. The trick is to keep moving forward, to let go of the fear and regret that slow us down and keep us from enjoying a journey that will soon be over. Yes, there will be unexpected bends in the road, shocking surprises we didn't see coming, but that's really the point, don't you think? And then we see Orson rolling up to Bree's house. Surprise, surprise. He comes with flowers and he's like, I wanted to see how you're doing after your great escape. These are for you. And Bree's like, how sweet and unexpected. Do you want to come in? And he comes in. And I'm like, does Bree just like attract murderers? Like, that's her vibe. Like, bad people like love her.
It's like, yes and no. But now that I think about how the whole, like, of all the seasons, I'm like, you might be onto something. That's the only foreshadowing I'll give you.
So that happened. And basically, that's it. But we have some hot takes. And first, we have to do our fuck, marry, kill.
Okay, let me think.
Which is so difficult. It's gotten progressively more difficult as we've gone on. I think I have it.
Okay, you go first then.
I have to kill Orson. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Actually, never mind. Okay. I'll stick with it. I'll play this out, but now I've had another thought. I have to kill Orson because protect Mike at all costs.
Okay.
I'm going to marry Mike because he deserves someone better than Susan. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's
getting
beat up every other day over her. Like, he's getting in fights.
Yeah. No. She's a mess. She's a burden.
Yes. And then fuck. I'm going to have to fuck Gabby.
She's actually my go-to for the fuck as well.
Because, like, she deserves some, like just some meaningless, just she needs it. She needs it after this ordeal. She needs to go get her mind off things.
Yeah.
And she looked gorgeous. She ran super fast. Her cardio levels are high. She's in shape. She had beautiful hair when she was looking in at them. But I think she needs the fuck, so.
Okay. Fair enough.
But my alternate kill would have been Carlos after I thought about it more.
Yeah. I mean, my kill, I'm kind of stuck between Carlos and Nora just because even in the few scenes we got with her, it's her fucking introduction and I already want to kill that bitch. So I'm like, I can't with her. I think I'm going to roll with Carlos, though, just because he's more established and his behavior was just such a letdown after this season. And Gabby made such a good point, too, where she's like, I literally changed my mind on something I swore I'd never do because I love you. And this is what you do in return. And like his whole argument of like, oh, well, you had an affair and you said I could. It's like, yeah, but that was a very different time. Like that was a long time ago and the circumstances were different. Like you guys have grown so much together and been through so much. Like, you really thought that this was still acceptable? Like, come on, bro. Get a grip. So there's that. I would also fuck Gabby because I think she just looked really good in this episode. Like, I loved it. And she also was just killing it. And I found her stoicism at the end, like, very attractive. I don't know why. Like, how she handled that. So I would roll with that. And then Mary, I think I want to steal your Mary and also marry Mike because, yeah, fuck Susan. This shit's ridiculous.
He needs better. He needs to settle down with somebody nice.
With, like, less chaos that they inflict on themselves. He deserves
it. He's great.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, for sure. Do you have a housewife of the week?
Yeah, Gabby. After we went over her storyline, I have to give it to her. Or Lynette, I guess, for squaring off with Nora, but...
Everybody except for Susan kind of had a cool moment like that. Like Bree literally had a gun in her head.
Trying to take a bullet.
She escaped a mental institution and was willing to take a bullet. So that was cool. But so maybe was it worth it?
Maybe just everybody but Susan. It's the season finale. We could just give it to them all but Susan.
Because I also feel like Lynette handled Nora better than I would have. So
For sure. Yeah. I would have not been that level-headed. I wouldn't have been making any sense. I would have just been blind rage.
Yeah, so definitely, I think all three of them earned it this week. They all were put through some serious bullshit and handled it really well. So props, except for Susan.
Yeah, so that's I feel confident in that choice. Mm-hmm. And then Apple rating. I have mine.
Okay.
All right. 3.75.
Nice. Okay, right on the money there.
I was thinking 3.5 after the immediate watching of it. But after we went over Gabby's storyline, I was like, three of the four storylines were okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think like the storylines, same thing. I'm like, I don't know why I got so fucking bored, I guess, when I watched the first
time. Because it was so Susan heavy and like nothing really happened for Susan besides Mike getting hit by a car.
I think they were just, like, trying to make us care about, like, I think they realized, okay, we're going to have Mike get run over, but we need to find a way to make the audience care more about it. So they were, like, trying to shoehorn in all this shit with Susan. And it was like, okay, but, like, we should have had their relationship building for longer than this. Like, it just, I just don't care. And, like, this whole thing is just so ridiculous. So, yeah, like, definitely knocked down because of her stupid-ass story.
Yeah, they had an honest connection last episode, but then it's just jumping the gun to get married. It's like, what the fuck? We didn't ever find out anything about Felicia Tillman again. It's like, I guess Paul and Zach are just still around, but I care very little about them. Edie, where the hell is she? She's still in the hospital. Nobody cares. They just
didn't put her in the finale for some reason, which is like, weird.
There were lots of things missing for me. And on top of that, the stories were just slow. The pace was too slow. There were exciting things at the end, but the pacing was so bad that it ruined the actual meat of the stories. Like, all the meat came at the end for every story, which I think is how they wanted it. But at the same time, watching the first 30 minutes of it, I was like, who cares?
Yeah. And I think this story, I mean, this season just suffers from, like, we've been saying the whole season, like, the Applewhite story was just not fleshed out. It wasn't paced well. We would go, like, 5 or 6 episodes without seeing them. And then to have, like, the finale be so heavily based on them, like, was just, it just wasn't, that's what I found boring. It's like, Bree having a gun pulled to her head shouldn't be so fucking boring.
It was like, so boring.
I just found it, like, I just don't care. And like,
where did he get a gun still? Like, so many plot holes.
They didn't build him up as a good enough villain. I just feel like with shows like this, you need someone that's there to cause chaos. But the Applewhite story was so tragic that it wasn't really juicy. It was just depressing. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah. It was like, also that he was, like, a good boy. Like, he was a good son for, like, 90% of the season. Like, he cared.
So it was just tragic. Whereas with Mary Alice, like, obviously when she killed herself, that was sad. And that storyline had its sad moments. But it was so over the top, like, with the murder and the investigation, that it was, like, still, like, campy. Like, still fun. And I felt like the Applewhite story was just a little too, like, it just wasn't campy enough, I feel like. We just didn't get enough. And so that kind of, like, brought it down for me. But, like you said, the other three stories were really, like, they were more engaging. So it was, like, a little bit better. But I will give it props, too, because, like I said, it sets up a lot of season three really well. So that kind of makes me want to, like, give it a little bit more. So maybe, like, reflecting on it once you see season three or start season three, you'll be like, oh, like, okay, I guess this was a little more that. But like, if you are watching for the first time, it's super lame and it kind of doesn't make sense. So it's like, it's like bad storytelling.
Well, yeah, that's the same. I mean, I feel like I voiced my concerns throughout this. I feel like yeah, it just wasn't it. 3.75 is the best I could give it. And yeah, now we've finished season two. We're on to season three. We're like, what, a third of the way? How many? There's eight seasons? Seven?
Eight.
Yeah, so
we're and season four short.
Yeah. Well, we are going to review John Tucker Must Die, I believe.
Yeah.
That's our plan.
That's going to be our
like, that'll be our send-off for season two and entry into season three.
Exactly.
But in the meantime, we'll probably be taking about a month off. And then we'll be back with our season three for you guys.
We will be back, and we have plans to be better than ever. So
yes.
I know we've had some tech issues with my mic those last few episodes, but I promise those will be solved before the new season, everybody. Yes. So
we're aware of some things we need to work
on. Yeah.
But we are so thankful that you've been with us for two seasons now, if you've been listening along the whole time. And if you've missed any episodes, they'll be there. Catch up. And in the meantime, we will also be posting on Instagram and stuff every now and then. Tweet here and there. Who knows? But follow us on all the social media. Follow us on all the platforms so you can be updated when we are releasing our new season three.
Yeah.
So.
Well, quick note. Yeah. Before we sign off, I do have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Looking at the season as a whole, now that you've seen all of season two, I know I built it up as being pretty terrible. And so I just want to know, like, now that you've seen it, kind of what are your thoughts, I guess, quickly, and not to drag this out super long, but.
I mean, out of a classic Apple rating, I think it gets a 3.75.
Okay.
With season one getting, like, somewhere between a 4.25 and a 4.5, season one.
Okay. Yeah, I do feel like the finale of this season really sums up the problems of the whole season.
Yeah, in a weird way. There were good. They were like, okay, part one, banger. Part two, what happened? Like that's how the whole season was.
All direction. Once George was dead, all the direction for the season was out the window.
Yeah,
it's like they only planned up until that point. They're like, we'll figure it out.
So I mean, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't like the worst television I've ever seen. There were certainly times where I'm like, these are great storylines. Like there were some great moments, but it overall, like reviewing it as an entire piece, it wasn't it.
Okay. I was like, am I crazy? Like, I hope that I'm not insane when I talk about this season.
No, we're usually pretty aligned on things.
Yeah. Very true.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone. And we will be back. We'll let you know when we're back. But until then, you have lots of time to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.